Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Taking Stock Live. All right, here we are. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Taking Stock Live. My name is Kalila Reynolds, joining you live from Montego Bay this week. I'm all over the place, huh? Last week it was Miami. This week we're in Mobay. And apologies if you're hearing some music in the background. Looks like they decided that 8 o'clock was the time that they're going to turn up their jam here in Mobay. So, you know, I don't mind. Get a little Bruno Mars in now and again, along with all our business stuff. We do have a full show for you tonight. We have a lot of things to talk about, both locally and internationally. You might have noticed a new ticker on the JSC. Siboney is now officially Innovative Energy. So exciting times are ahead. What's in the pipeline for Innovative Energy? We'll discuss the details. But before we go to that, don't forget to hit that like button and subscribe to the channel. And let me know in the comments, where are you joining us from? What part of Jamaica? What part of the world? I would love to know who we have online today. Now, here's a look at what's coming up in tonight's show, followed by What's Hot in Business. And of course, come on, let's get this money.
Introducing a new era, Siboney has officially changed its name to Innovative Energy Group Limited. Does this transition signal a more specialized approach to energy solutions? What to expect with this rebranding? Executive Chairman Nigel Davey joins us live to discuss. And the analysts weigh in on the latest market developments. The Bitcoin halving event is over. What does this mean for local and international investors? Plus, what are the experts saying about the equity price increase on the Jamaica stock market in the last quarter? We'll discuss. But first, here's What's Hot, brought to you by JMMB Group, your best interest at heart. The Jamaica Stock Exchange says it has temporarily removed its app to perform a significant upgrade. The app was removed from both the iOS App Store and Google Play Stores on Monday. The JSC said the redesign process will take approximately 2 months to complete. The company said the update will enhance user experience, improve functionality, and build a foundation for implementing new features. The JSC said that while the app is unavailable, users can visit its website, which has many of the same features and functionalities as the app. Finance Minister Dr. Nigel Clark says a criminal conviction is needed before recovery of the more than $3 billion stolen from SSL accounts can begin. According to the minister, under Jamaica's Proceeds of Crime Act, while the tracing of the stolen funds can begin before the end of the criminal case, conviction is needed before the relevant authorities can begin recovery proceedings. Investigators said some 200 SSL accounts were skimmed in a fraud plot which spanned over 10 years. Clark said, however, that affected individuals are free to pursue civil suits against any of the parties allegedly involved in the fraud case. Only one person, former wealth advisor Jeanan Panton, has been charged so far. Grace Kennedy now owns a 20% stake in food manufacturing company Spurtree Spices. Between March and April, GK subsidiary GK Investments Limited had purchased 71 million shares from directors of Spurtree for roughly $161 million. In addition to the 6% stake GK received during Spurtree's 2021 initial public offering, Grace Kennedy now has a 20% stake in the company. This means Spurtree Spices will now be listed as an associate company of Grace Kennedy. The move comes after Spurtree Spices announced that it will launch more than 24 new products on May 1 and will refresh and relaunch its rebranding. Netflix's crackdown on password sharing is reaping positive rewards. Netflix's crackdown on password sharing is reaping positive rewards as the company hit a record high of 270 million subscribers. According to Netflix, it added more than 9 million subscribers in the first 3 months of the year. The streaming service also beat revenue forecasts, bringing in $9.3 billion in the first quarter, surpassing the expected $9.2 billion. Netflix's first quarter revenues are up 15% from a year ago. Tesla has recalled nearly 4,000 Cybertrucks after reports of a faulty accelerator pedal. Tesla issued the recall for all trucks made between November 2023 and April 2024 after a Cybertruck owner posted a now viral video warning of issues with the accelerator pedal. In the video, the truck owner said part of the pedal slid off while he was driving, causing the car to lurch forward at full throttle on its own. Tesla's stock dropped for the sixth consecutive day after the recall was announced. The recall comes just days after Bloomberg's Billionaire Index showed that Tesla CEO Elon Musk was replaced on the list of the world's richest people by Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg. What's Hot was brought to you by JMMB Group, your best interest at heart.
It's finally over. All four lessons in money marketing are done and uploaded to Money Mission, so you can watch the videos now. I've literally shared almost everything I know about social media and business. You want to know how I've been successful, how I've grown my platforms, how I get people to buy? Take money marketing. Let's get this money. Welcome back. So before we get into our first discussion tonight, let me see who's joining us and where you are from. Starting out with Zuri, big up yourself. Zuri, who says, let's get this money. Nana sends as usual, joining us from far, far away. Is Prince Charming and Cinderella there too? Are they there? Hussein says, let's get this money. We got Colette checking in from Kingston, Jermaine, all the way in China. Records is ready and waiting. Dr. Lithium is outside. Orville is in Spanish Town. Gafar is in Mobay. Hey, Gafar, you're not far from me. Humble Boss is checking in from Negril, Venetia in Portmore. We have JT in the Cayman Islands. Quincy checking in from Grenada, Chevane in Portmore, and people all over the world just as usual. Tama Texture joining from Mandeville, as well as Earl in Helsha and Royston from Red Hills. Love to see it. Roswell in Unity Hall and Patricia in Bermuda. So just keep dropping them. Keep letting me know where you are joining us from this evening. It's been a long time in coming. We've been telling you about this for a few months now. Innovative Energy Group has taken the bold step to acquire Siboney. Well, why did they do it? And what can we expect from them going forward? Here to tell us more is Managing Director of Innovative Energy Group, Nigel Davey, and Investment Banking Manager at Barita, Awa Muirhead. Thanks for joining us, Nigel and Awa.
Having us, Kalila.
Good evening, Kalila. How are you doing today?
I'm not bad. Is the music distracting you? Are you hearing the music in the background much?
A little, but I'm good. Nigel.
Okay.
I'm fine.
All right. I guess it's distracting me more than it's distracting you then, because they were good. Last night they had a silent party outside. You saw people dancing with their headphones on. And tonight, just because we have the show, they decide to have a full bash love music outside, but so it goes. Sometimes we make do. So first of all, Nigel, I'm sure everyone wants to know, you know, why your company, and I know we spoke about this before, I think you were on with Al a few months ago, but just give us the recap for those who didn't get to see that interview, you know, why your company decided to take over Siboney, which was a shell company on the JSE at the time.
Okay, well, the history is simply IEC always had intentions to go on the stock market. We were contemplating that over 3-4 years ago. The opportunity came up when we understand that the buyer for Siboney backed out of the deal, and we basically stepped in. But it's one way for us, which we believe was an easier way to get on the market than how we had planned. The cost is almost the same. The process is less, let me say, burdensome, if you will. But it was always our intention. That's the long and short.
Right. And how long were you considering that before it became a reality?
So we have been contemplating going to the market maybe 3-4 years ago. Now, when we heard about the Siboney transaction, falling apart, that was, I would say, 2022. And then we stepped in that role to acquire Siboney, I would say, first quarter of 2023. And we completed that transaction in June 2023.
And Awa, what role did Barita play in all of this?
So Marita acted as broker for the transaction. So essentially what that meant was, to the extent that the shares were purchased, IEC or IEG now that is listed needed a broker to essentially allow those shares to be seen on the JSE. In addition to that, we provided strategic advice to Nigel and his company. So essentially, we looked at the reverse takeover as an option, we looked at an IPO as an option, and we looked at Nigel's strategic imperatives, and we decided, you know, that the reverse takeover made sense, given the timing of everything that Nigel wanted to do and the benefits that he would, that would redound to the business from doing the reverse takeover. So in a nutshell, we acted as broker and we provided significant strategic advice for this transaction.
So Nigel, what are the plans for the company going forward? You're now listed, you have your ticker. What's the next step?
Well, as you may know, and your listeners may know, IEC has been in the energy business for over 35 years. We have developed, constructed several energy projects in the Northeast US and right here in Jamaica, notably for the Jamaica Broilers cogeneration project that was done back in 1997. We constructed their ethanol plant, Jamaica Broilers ethanol plant, that was in the early 2000s. We also constructed on behalf of West Kingston Power Plant, their power plant on Industrial Terrace back in 2012. So we have been in this business for quite some time. Where are we going with the new IEG? We're going to continue the trend. We consider ourselves a vertical integrated company, meaning that we develop, construct, and operate energy infrastructure projects. So we expect to continue that trend. As you well know, green energy is the buzzword these days. We believe it's the future. The way I describe green energy in terms of solar is, if you don't have solar at your home, it's almost equivalent to financial malpractice in my mind, because the cost benefit is so attractive. I mean, the payback for solar projects today is under 2.5 years. So, you know, 2.5 years equates to an internal rate of return of over 50%. So it just makes sense. We are bullish about the green energy business, and we want to, you know, get a decent slice of the market going forward.
So would that entail growing what you already have, or are you looking to have new projects come on stream?
New projects. So in a nutshell, from where we sit, we construct projects for third parties. Notable projects that we have done in the green energy space would be the Manly solar project that was 2.3 megawatts AC. We did the Sangs International Airport solar project that was 2.2 megawatts. We are in phase three of that project, additional 5 megawatts, and that's with a joint venture with Wigton. We are also doing a joint venture with Wigton for the Ministry of Agriculture in Essex Valley. So what we're doing is basically doing construction of projects. We're developing and constructing projects for third-party clients. But at this juncture, we want to also develop projects of our own. As you may know, the recent GPE bid, we submitted a bid for that particular project for 2 blocks. We believe that we have a compelling project. It's a very competitive process, the GPE renewable energy bid, but we expect to be competitive. I'm sure in another 6 months we'll know who the winners are in that tender.
So we actually had a question from the audience on that very topic. So Limitless Podcast wanted to know, have you been shortlisted? So yes, you have been shortlisted for the GPE's 100 megawatt request, or JPS's 300 megawatt request. Did you submit for both of those?
Yeah, so we submitted a bid for the GPE 100 megawatt. As you know, it's in blocks of up from 5 to 50 megawatts. We have 2 bids in for a piece of that. We have been pre-qualified for the JPSCO tranche. So again, the GPE segment, we won't know who the winners will be for another 60 to 90 days, hopefully before. And of course, we are in the RFQ process with the JPSCO, which we have been qualified for, but no RFP has yet been issued by the JPSCO.
I just wanted to observe that you're in a good space being in the industry that you are, given Jamaica's ambitious energy goals for the next few years. I think it's 50% by 2030. I think that's very ambitious. Do you think that's realistic?
It's very ambitious. And it is very tight, but you know, the goal, just by setting that goal, was encouraging for me in the energy space. If we achieve it, great. If we don't, I believe we can achieve it by 2037. 2030 is a stretch, but I'm so pleased with the target that was set. Mm-hmm. It just sets up all of us in the industry to work towards achieving at least 90% of that by 2030.
Well, it's your job to put up the projects and make it happen, or at least come as close as possible. And speaking of whose job it is to make it happen, Barita is involved in all of this as well. Limitless has another question, this time for Barita. They want to know, will Barita or other related companies be taking a stake in IEG?
So typically, we look at all the possibilities as it relates to our clients. At this point in time, I can see that there's no deliberate focus on taking a stake, but that does not mean that we won't if the potential and the need arises. Naturally, we think that energy and renewable energy in particular, as we've said before, is the future. I mean, if you think about where the globe is headed, not just Jamaica, then you will see the imperative of having renewable energy. So to the extent that the opportunity arises and we think it's best fit, then naturally we'll take a stake if appropriate at the time.
Next question comes from NanoSense, says, since you guys are bullish about green energy, any plans for hydrogen?
Absolutely, yes. Hydrogen is a frontier business, unlike the classic PV solar or wind. It requires a lot of capital to get to the hydrogen level. But we are bullish about it. We are exploring possibilities. We are not quite there yet because of the capital cost required to really, electrolyze water and convert it to hydrogen. But we have relatively inexpensive energy from solar, which is a necessary element or input to get hydrogen. So simple answer is yes, we are. And we are watching that market very, very carefully.
Interesting stuff. I don't know much about that market at all. Some more questions here. This one comes from Learn, Grow, Invest. What are the plans for fundraising in the short term? You know, our viewers love to know about that.
So
absolutely. Well, we have the expert with you, Awa.
Yeah, so
all right, Awa, that one's for you.
Yeah. So Nigel and IEG's strategy towards the reverse takeover and the ultimate name change was, of course, in line with a long-term strategic plan to grow the business through various strategic initiatives, deal making, etc. So naturally, fundraising is a key part of this. Renewable energy and energy in general is a high infrastructure type industry, which means that to the extent that we want to create any significant change, then we'll need capital throughout the entire process to get anywhere. So in the short term, definitely, yes, there will be some fundraising. How that will be structured, it will depend on the various deals that we look at. At this point in time, we are looking at some transactions with IEG, and I think the public will be made aware of them quite soon. So please stay tuned to see how things play out.
Is that one of those possibilities, an APO, additional public offer?
Kalila. So I would say everything is on the table. Naturally, put forward whether or not we'll be doing an APO at this time. It's a bit too early to state that up front, but everything is on the table. Fundraising can take various shapes, as you know, Kalila. To the extent that we're doing fundraising, I'd say that most market participants, most investors will be able to take some part in that. Because Barita, how we typically structure our transactions is we open it up to investors, right? Whether in the private market or the public market. So even if we do not do an APO, I can guarantee that investors will benefit from the growth of IEG over the ensuing quarters.
I mean, it's interesting because if fundraising is one of the objectives, you could have gone the IPO route rather than acquiring Siboney and getting on the stock exchange that way. And if you had gone the IPO route, you could have used that for fundraising, Nigel.
Yeah.
Of course. And it is no different, this route that we have taken. We believe this route makes good sense for us. And on advice, of course, from our financial advisors, and of course, from our directors who are savvy in this business. I'm just a technical guy. I lean on them for advice, if you will. However, we believe that the same objectives can be achieved via this, the route that we have taken. I should also add, Kalina, mm-hmm. that we have been working closely with Barita for quite some time, and it has been a pleasure. They have provided some invaluable guidance to us, and I'm sure this relationship with Barita will under blossom as we evolve.
Yeah, I would like to add to that, Kalina, right? So Nigel has mentioned it succinctly, but in essence, Nigel has some strategic plans that are very time sensitive. Now, the benefits of the IPO, or one of the benefits of the IPO, is visibility, and the reverse takeover achieves that as well. So too does the name change. Just being on this show right now creates visibility. It creates visibility to investors, to potential deal makers, right? And it impacts our overall capital raising initiatives. So to the extent that Nigel is visible to investors as he is right now, it puts us in a good place from a general capital raising standpoint. It also helps him with the deal making that he'll be doing through the course of the next few quarters. So from a timing perspective, it just made sense for us to go forward with the reverse takeover. The IPO process can be quite lengthy, admittedly. And when we took that into account, it made more sense for him to take this path.
Oh, good points. And I like that you said being on the show improves the visibility. Absolutely. It's the number one business show in the Caribbean. How do you mean? All right. So last question on the topic of funding. And this one is from Limitless, who wants to know, are you worried about the take up of an APO given the high interest rate environment and previous poor performance of APOs?
Okay. I feel that is more directed at myself. So yes. The truth is this. The high interest rate environment is an issue for stocks. And I mean, this is known the world over. So this is not a Jamaican phenomenon, right? It's not a Western Hemisphere phenomenon. It's just economics. Now, IEG's ability to raise capital through an APO is limited by a couple factors. Interest rates naturally being one, inflation being another, right? But more importantly, there are direct things that we as the investment bankers can do to ensure that we provide sufficient support to ensure the success of an APO. So in essence, what I'm saying, Kalila, is ultimately, IEG's long-term initiative will be to grow. How IEG grows is dependent on how we decide to structure things, right? Now, an APO, I believe that we could do an APO that is successful. And it really just takes a lot of work. Given the market conditions, though, is it the right time? I would say perhaps not just right now. Will the time come that it would be you know, perfect for an APO? I think so, right? So what does that mean? It means that in the interim, we can look at various modes at which we can do capital raising. And to the extent that we do decide on an APO, it means that we would have canvassed the market, we would have understood what the market wants, and we would have facilitated what the market wants. And in the event that we do the APO, then it would be a success. So we're not worried about having an unsuccessful APO because of our interest rates. And, you know, by extension, we're not worried about having successful capital raises, given the market circumstances. We'll structure the transaction and the deal to ensure that it is a success.
There is always an option. Whatever the environment, there's always something that can potentially work out. I'm going to take two final questions from the audience before we wrap. The first one comes from Richard, who wants to know, I guess this is for Nigel, can we see more joint, or can we expect to see more joint venture projects with Wigton?
The simple answer is yes. We are currently working on two large projects with value over, you know, $15 million. And we have together in a pipeline, you know, over, I would say, 15 projects that we have either bid on or are working on together. Depending on Wigton's strategic imperatives, that could change. But from where we sit, we are amenable to continue working with Wigton on these kind of projects. Naturally, I know that Wigton is moving out of wind and doing some of the PV solar, which is our bread and butter. It could be seen as being competitive, but I think from where we sit, we can collaborate on some of these projects. I mean, for the mutual benefit of both companies. So we expect to work together with Wigton continuously, but it's subject to Wigton's own decisions.
Awesome. Last question comes from Learn Grow Invest, who wants to know, what are the plans to serve the retail market?
That's a good question. So I think the reverse takeover in itself will serve the retail market. How? So IEG was not a listed company before the takeover of Sibani, right? Now, what you did have on the market is a shell company that didn't have a structured balance sheet. It didn't have any actual operations or profitability. What we've done quite literally is exchanged what was, you know, a shell and provided now for the retail investor, an entity that is operational, that has strategic plans, that is in renewable energy. And I mean, naturally, renewable energy, I mean, considering all that is happening globally in terms of climate change, global warming, etc., renewable energy is sticky. It's here to stay, right? So quite literally what we have provided is an entity on the market that was not there that will provide an avenue whereby you as a retail investor can see its profitability over time, can analyze the business, and thereby decide to buy. And with the good work that Nigel and Barita will be doing, naturally, we expect that over time, business will do extremely well, right? And that puts the retail investor in a position to purchase the stock and, of course, get the benefits that are associated with purchasing a very good company. And finally, I mean, to the extent that we do decide to do a public offer in the future, naturally, the retail investor will benefit there as well. So I think we're on the path to serving the retail investor quite significantly, just based on what has been done so far. And of course, based on what we intend to do in the future.
All right. Anything you wanted to add to that, Nigel, before we go?
Other than from where we sit, Kalila and your listeners, we see, I mean, significant opportunities both in Jamaica and in the region in this space. And again, we are looking to really corner a decent slice of the market for ourselves, which I'm sure will inure to the benefit of our shareholders. But what I can say is the renewable energy future is very bright. And while I'm not providing advice to investors, that is ours job. We believe that if you invest in companies like ours in the renewable energy market, the future can only be even brighter for you on your investment. Thank you.
Good stuff. So look out for them on the ticker on the JSC Stock Exchange, the Jamaica Stock Exchange. Energy is their ticker. Thank you very much, Nigel. Thank you, Awa.
Thank you, Kalila.
It's time
now. Thank you, Kalila. Have a good evening to your listeners.
You too. It's time now for our poll question. It has to do with something we're about to discuss in the analyst segment coming up next. How did you prepare for the Bitcoin halving event? That's if you prepared at all. So A, I adjusted my investment strategy in anticipation of gains. B, I changed nothing. C, I don't invest in Bitcoin. D, other, you can just leave a comment. And while you're doing that, let me ask you a question. Have you signed up for the Money Mission community yet? If not, here is a look at what you're missing.
I think you're going to need consistency in income. You need more clarity on, okay, more or less how much you're going to make a month. And I know it depends on the job and it depends on how many jobs you get for the month. But when you average it out, like, is this job going to bring in enough income for what you need it to do?
Welcome back once again. Let me remind you to hit the like button. Up next, we've got your market recap and our analysts are standing by. Hey, moneymakers, join the KRM fam with our official merch. Get it now at KalilaReynolds.com. Let's get this money.
The JSC Combined Index lost over 4,000 points last week. 124 stocks traded across the main and junior markets for the week ending Friday, April 19, 2024. 46 made gains, 61 lost value, and 17 stayed the same. 56 million shares changed hands on the Jamaican dollar market, valued at $477 million. Wigton was last week's most traded stock. It took up 11% of market volume with 6 million shares trading. There was no change in the stock's price, and it opened the new week at $1.14. Trans-Jamaican Highway traded the second highest. The stock lost 1 cent open Monday at $3.19. And SOS rounded out last week's most traded with 4 million shares changing hands. The stock's price was unchanged, opening Monday at $1.70. Now let's see who are the biggest gains for the week. PBS 9.75 was the market's biggest gain, up 15% last week. The stock opened Monday at $115. Paramount Trading was the week's second biggest gainer, also up 15%. And Iron Rock Insurance was up 14% to close the week at $2.52. On the losing side now, KLE Group was the week's biggest loser. The stock lost 20% open Monday at $1.92. Kingston Wharves had the second biggest dip. The stock lost 14% to open the new week at $26.03. And the lab also lost 14% to close the week at $1.47. Over on the Trinidad and Tobago Stock Exchange, the composite index lost 16 points or 1% last week. Massey was the most traded stock. It gained 2 cents to open Monday at $4.37 TT. Trinidad Cement was the biggest gain of the week. The stock was up 9% to start the week at $2.97 TT. And on the losing side, West Indian Tobacco Company fell 26% to open Monday at $11.23 TT. Over in the US, the Dow Jones was mostly flat last week, while the S&P 500 lost 3.5% and the NASDAQ fell 6%. Over at the pumps, the price of 87 gas climbed $2.59 last week, while 90 was up $2.60. On the other hand, the price of regular diesel fell $2.14 and low sulfur diesel fell by $1.87. In foreign exchange, it took an average $156.35 Jamaican to purchase $1 last Friday. That's 17 cents more than the week before. Meanwhile, it took an average $114.40 Jamaican to purchase one Canadian dollar. One British pound cost on average $196.17 Jamaican. And you could buy 1 euro for $169.42 Jamaican on average. Finally, on the crypto markets, Bitcoin prices were up almost 8% over the past 5 days, trading at $65,958 US on Monday. Ethereum prices were also up almost 8%, trading at $3,206 US on Monday. Disclaimer: this is not intended as financial advice. Please consult a licensed financial advisor before making investment decisions.
I am back, but my screen is black. What is going on? All right, are you guys hearing me? Can you hear me? You can hear me, but you can't see me. Let me see how I can fix this quickly. Oh my gosh, this is what happens when you do a show and you decide that you're going to do it on the road, even though you're not in studio where you normally are. For some reason, it's not picking up my camera anymore. So let's switch cameras and just use. There we are. All right, now you can see me. Good. Whew. Sorted that out. It's time now for the analyst, reminding you to hit the like button as well. I have three guests with me this evening, so we have a jam-packed segment tonight. There are quite a few trending topics that we need to break down, hence, you know, the number of guests. We're going to be starting with a review on Bitcoin halving. I did a video about this a few days ago because Bitcoin halving event was, I think, over the weekend. We have a local and an international perspective on the event. And then later on, we're also going to be having our OG Clive Charlton from JMMB giving us an update on the JSC's performance over the last quarter. But first, let me introduce our Bitcoin guests, our Bitcoin analysts. We have Gaffar Ellis, who's a blockchain evangelist. And we also have Charlene Hill Fadarepo, who's a strategic Bitcoin consultant and CEO of Mango Digital Strategies. Hi, Gaffar. Hi, Charlene.
And hi, guys.
Hello.
Background as well. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us both.
Let's start with you, Gaffar. I saw a question in the chat already asking what is Bitcoin. I think they're just being provocative, but we can start there. Start from the very basics. What is Bitcoin? What is Bitcoin halving? And then what does it mean for us as investors?
All right, so it's actually a very good question, especially if you've never interacted with these digital assets called cryptocurrencies. So Bitcoin, hi guys, I see some of my friends online. So a Bitcoin is a digital asset. I call it a language of trust. So like when we do anything with money, finance, anything that exchanges value is a language. And that particular language is just stored on this thing called a blockchain. A blockchain is a digital registry of every activity or every transaction that takes place between peers. And a Bitcoin is one of the first of its kind that existed in a public format where anybody, and this was back in 2009, where anybody could be able to just jump on the Bitcoin core ecosystem, and you could start, at the time, there was this thing called mining. It's just you putting in work to bring the coin into existence. And how this is done, it's done using a very specific mathematical process. And that mathematical process produces or gives you the end result of this thing called a Bitcoin. We'll get into some more of it as the discussion goes along, but on the surface, that's pretty much what a Bitcoin is. It's a language of trust, it's a digital asset, something that's stored on this thing called a blockchain.
You have a lot of fans online. All your supporters are tuning in. Go Gap.
Family and friends, they're here.
People saying they're proud of you. I love that. All right, so the halving event, now, what happened and why is that important?
The Bitcoin halving is actually a very important particular event to take place. And that is because within the protocol when Bitcoin was designed, every 4 years ago, the reward structure for Bitcoins changes. It gets halved pretty much. That's why it's called halving. So, and the 4 years is not set to a specific date. It's a certain amount of blocks. So that's why it's called a blockchain. A certain amount of blocks has to be produced to create this particular event, right? And that happens just about every 4 years or so. Now, when the halving happens, when Bitcoin just started out, it was about 50 Bitcoins, but it was 50 Bitcoins specifically that would be rewarded to the miners or the producers of the coin, the people who bring it into existence through adding their computers to the node. Over time, hi, Sammy, good to see you. That's my crypto mom right there. Over time, what happens is when the halving happens, it got reduced from 50 Bitcoins to 25, 12 and a half, and it's been reducing so far up to this point. So we're in now the fourth halving for Bitcoin. So that reward is about 3.65 or something there in terms of the amount of Bitcoins that you would receive for as a reward, as a miner. Yeah.
And so what that does is it makes it more scarce, which increases the value that you always talk about.
Yeah, so that's one of the ways to derive the value. It creates this sense of scarcity. One second. Hi, Mama. My daughter, one second.
And I think they're playing a movie outside where I am now. So yeah. All kind of things going on.
She just woke up, so she wants to say hi. Say hi, Mama.
Oh, hi.
All right. Your daddy kiss. All right, go stay down to my mom.
Okay. Hello, Patrick.
Yes.
What can the juice and the beans?
All right. You can have one of it. I'm not sure, but you can have one.
No, I meant to pick something.
I'm not sure.
Have something I can pick you from. Trust me,
It happens. That's my daughter. My pride and joy right there. So yeah. Once that scarcity in terms of the Bitcoins that's being rewarded, yes, it can have a positive impact on the price of the coin because you know, it's a lot scarcer to be sourced and to be bought. But the key thing is the Bitcoin, the reason why it feels a lot more scarce is because there's only ever going to be 21 million Bitcoins. So even as the halvings happen, yes, that's one way of providing the scarcity. The other way is because there's only 21 million, there's going to be people holding on to this asset for longer. And that's where the true scarcity comes from. The true Bitcoin holders, who the people want to really value it, will hold it for a very long time. That's the true section where the scarcity is coming from.
All right. So Charlene, tell me about your journey with Bitcoin and how you became a LinkedIn top voice on the subject.
Okay, indeed. So thanks for having me, Kalila. I came to the Bitcoin industry with about 15 years of traditional banking experience. And right now I'm running a company called Mango Digital Strategies. We actually help banks onboard into Bitcoin. And so, you know, this halving that Ghaffar just talked about is certainly a really, really important part of the Bitcoin story. For me, in terms of my business, I really focus on Bitcoin's utility. So like you heard before, Bitcoin is digital money. But around the world, Bitcoin is being used in so many different incredible ways. And so I focus my business and some of the other projects that I've been a part of, really understanding how Bitcoin is having an impact across African countries, across the Caribbean, and also in the United States.
Right. So tell me a bit about the work that you're doing, because you mentioned that you do work in Africa, you pay special attention to Africa and Caribbean communities and how Bitcoin can be used to empower our people, to uplift our people from these areas. So what motivated you to take this specific approach? And do you explore this in your book as well?
I do indeed. So I actually started off, in 2021, when I was early in the Bitcoin space, I started a podcast called The Bitcoin in Africa Show. And so we started looking at how Bitcoin was being used in Africa. We started off looking at Nigeria because Nigeria is actually one of the largest Bitcoin, Bitcoin economies in Africa. And the more time I spent looking at Africa, I saw, you know, all these incredible pockets of utility. And then after I worked on the show quite a bit, I started writing my book, which is called The Bitcoin Leap. And we're studying how Bitcoin is impacting Africa. And so, you know, here in the West, we think about Bitcoin as a digital, like an investment asset. But in African countries, folks are using it as a store of value, as a medium of exchange. You know, you have Nigerian vendors buying electronics from China. using Bitcoin because the value of the Naira has been devalued over time. So, you know, for individuals in countries where they've had tough economic conditions, hyperinflation, or authoritarian governments, you really see Bitcoin offering an escape valve and a path to financial freedom. And that's been so interesting. I've seen it in Kenya, Ghana, South Africa, and, you know, any country that has dealt with difficult economic conditions, you're seeing large populations on the retail level of folks really choosing Bitcoin, instead of their existing currency, fiat currency.
Wow, that is super interesting. Because up until a few years ago, here in Jamaica, that used to be the rule of the US dollar.
That's right.
So because our currency was devaluing so rapidly, is not stable, everybody used to just invest in US dollars. But Ghaffar, do you see more Caribbean people and more Jamaican people investing in Bitcoin now?
We've been. So I'm just going to give you a little bit of a background, and I'm still searching if somebody started at that time before me. So in 2010, when I started interacting with Bitcoin, I was a college student. It was a much more lonely place. I was around since they told you that Bitcoin was only used by criminals and crooks and all the negative stuff. Now we have ETFs and institutional people who want to use this said unsolicited security that people want to interact with, which is, again, that's a whole other issue. But in terms of people in the Caribbean region and the diaspora using crypto or Bitcoin, let's talk about Bitcoin specifically. Yes, the increase is there. We have young people in universities now. We have people in high school. We have track and field and other athletes in different areas having cryptocurrency. We have institutional people too who are looking at it as a store of value, as was mentioned earlier. And I would call it a more diversified financial asset, something that has, you know, a lot more volatility built into it, but that volatility could also be the upside on it. We have assets moving in very short periods of time, massively, 10x's, 100x's, 1000x's, and also, and that's in both directions. So don't think I'm only talking about the upside, right? So it is happening, and I see more people my age and younger. I'm 34 now. And when I got involved in this space, well, that was a while back. I was pretty much a lot younger. But a lot more people are involved now. And I'm at the point now where for the last, like our friend here said, in 2021, when she really got active again, at that point, I started interacting with EVMs or Ethereum-based assets and having to teach people what I know, sharing it willingly. And since then, the amount of persons locally, sometimes when I join some communities and see the amount of Jamaicans there, people from Trinidad, Barbados, Turks and Caicos, Guyana, the Guyanese, they are here in crypto and they've showed up. Dominica and Dominican Republic too. I have friends in those territories that are looking to, from a corporate standpoint, from an individual standpoint, acquiring Bitcoin and other cryptocurrency assets now more than ever, because they see it as a diversified asset class that they could make some possible gains from for the future.
Well, if you started in 2010, bro, you're rich.
No.
No. And no. You didn't sell.
Anybody, like the people on the call here, anybody who knows where I'm coming from understands why it's a discipline to still be here. So I lost my Bitcoins in 2013, over 1,000 of them.
Yeah.
And
1,000. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That must
so
have been
you, and that's what I said, there are upsides and downs. There are many people with realities like what I've lived. There's somebody on the call here that's very dear to me. Recently, she got hacked. And that reality is harsh too. So in this space, I'll say this is what I teach. I teach security first. And I'm not talking like, the world is ending type of security. No, just the world may start for somebody else if they get access to what you have. So be knowledgeable about what you do, not your keys, not your crypto. That is a standard rule. And just like if you have your bank account, if you give me your bank card and the cards and everything, I can just go to the supermarket and shop and everything. Somebody can do the same thing with your crypto. And if you're not very good at 2010, like I wasn't very good with knowing all the details, right? I was on the internet of things, the deep web, and somebody introduced this weird thing to me while I was in college. And people used to, there's a guy who bought a pizza with a certain amount of Bitcoin that today he wishes he still held. that to me wasn't a robbery, it was a fair exchange at the time, but the value of that is significant. So when you come across some of these digital products, look at them as an option for your future, something that you are going to be in charge of. One day, you won't have to walk into the bank, which is where everything is aiming for now, right? You don't have to walk into the bank and talk to a teller to do a transaction. Well, in cryptocurrencies right now, I don't need a broker. I don't need a bank. I don't need somebody to verify for me. All that is information is registered on the blockchain. And Ghaffar Ellis, as a natural person, is not attached to that transaction in any way, shape, or form, unless I decide to tell you that, which I don't have to. So the beauty of this change is, like, for me, it's like Internet 1.0 going to 2.0, where the dot-com boom was kind of crazy and everything was seemingly going to work. But pets.com failed in the year 2000. Everything on the internet now is like pets.com. It's a promise that you can build with software as a service and it works. Well, with cryptocurrencies, it's that easy to interact. And of course, you have a centralized way of doing it, where that structured infrastructure is required for businesses to want to trust you. But from a peer-to-peer standpoint, I don't need a centralized exchange as an individual to do anything with cryptocurrency. I hold my keys, I get my coins or my tokens, and discipline yourself along the way. Figure out a strategy that works for you. And even the patient slug in this industry can make a lot of money if he's disciplined. And I hope that everybody who is listening tonight, I'm not telling anybody to go buy Bitcoin. I never will tell you to buy anything. I don't even tell myself to buy anything. But if I do see something in life as an entrepreneur that I believe that I can have an impact on, even if I fail, I want to know, right? That's the entrepreneurial spirit. You want to know how you could pull the future into the present, and Bitcoin is vitally a part of that future. Yeah.
So Ghaffar, it's interesting some of the points that you raised just now, because I was listening to Charlene saying that in some of these African countries, in Nigeria, for example, they are using Bitcoin as basically a currency of exchange. While you're mentioning your friend regrets spending his Bitcoin on pizza a few years ago. So Charlene, what is the strategy now, 2024, post the halving? What should we be doing with Bitcoin ideally?
So not financial advice, but in 2024, you should be bullish on Bitcoin because you should be bullish on Africa. So let me talk about Africa. 1.4 billion people on the continent of Africa.
Yes.
And, you know, while Africa in terms of a cryptocurrency market is small, 2.3%, it's $100 billion worth of on-chain transactions last year. The average age of Africa is roughly 19 to 20 years old. So you have an entire continent full of digital natives that are hungry for a better life. And they are choosing Bitcoin and not crypto. It's really important that we say Bitcoin and not crypto, right? They're not tricking, they're not choosing Ethereum. They're not choosing, Dogecoin. They're choosing Bitcoin specifically for this aspect of provably scarce, right? Bitcoin is the hardest, the soundest money that you can actually own as a digital asset. It is better than the Rand. It is better than the Naira. It is better than the CD, because the state sponsored or these fiat currencies have known to be devalued over time, not just a couple years ago, for 20, 40 years. Sadly, on the low end, the inflation in Africa is roughly 28-29%. So that's Ghana and Nigeria. On the high end, we're talking 100% in Zimbabwe. And Africans are choosing Bitcoin because it offers greater purchasing power. Now, if you're an investor and you look at the numbers, you should think to yourself, where is the market going? Where are the consumers moving? And where is my money going to work the best for me? And so, you know, so you can certainly invest in Bitcoin as a store of value, but what you should really think about is Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, a store of value, you know, an agent to push energy development in Africa. There are all of these incredible utilities that are happening specifically to Bitcoin, not crypto. It's really important that, you know, that we don't kind of muddy the waters. These innovations are happening only in the Bitcoin space, in these areas where, in these countries with hyperinflation and terrible economic conditions.
A couple questions from the audience before we jump over to Clive. Sean wants to know, Is it easy to create an account and use from Jamaica? I'm talking like getting the money to and from the account. That's for Gaffar. I always hear people say they want to get into Bitcoin, but they don't know how to do it from our location.
All right. This is a question that pops up all the time and people are pulling by. So I'll use an analogy to answer that question. I have a family member who wants to send me $100. How do they normally get it to me? So you have all these payment processors and payment gateways and clearance houses that you can send through. And if you send me $100 in Jamaica now, it costs about $10 to $12 for the payments to all the middlemen to get it to me. Well, the cryptocurrencies, if you buy it with fiat currency, because they're currencies nonetheless. So you take your fiat currencies and you swap, you exchange it for some cryptocurrency. Let's say you decide to use this particular crypto asset called Bitcoin. You buy some Bitcoin. The value of Bitcoin goes up and you say, well, I put $100 in, it's now worth $200. I want $200. What do you do with the Bitcoin? You sell it back for your fiat currency. You send that fiat currency to wherever you want it. No, every country is a little bit different. Some countries, it may, the cost for remittances may be low. Some countries like Jamaica, if I, they want to ask you, where are you getting your money from? They want to know, why is it that you're moving $3,000, $5,000, $2,000, $50? There's a particular bill in the United States that if you're moving up more than $120 worth of cryptocurrency, it gets reported. Not $10,000, $120. So there are all these back-end little things that matter, really not to you on the front end because you may not know. But you can exchange any currency for another currency. If you're the type of person that wants a corporate entity to do that for you, there are many. There's Coinbase, there's all these different platforms out there that will accept your Bitcoin and issue dollars back to you that you can clear. You pay the taxes on that transaction if you want to, and you have that account sent to Jamaica. Does it mean it is always that easy? No. Some banks will waive that transaction. You'll have a transaction come in and they'll tell you that there's a hold on your account because the source can't be verified. And that's because the bank too has to deal with its payment processor and payment gateway. And they just don't want to have those issues. So that they want that validation. But there are places in the world that have worse conditions than us and they still figure it out. There's a place called Argentina, where if you send $100 to somebody in Argentina, they receive $10, $90 go towards the government and all the payment processors. And you can use something like Bitcoin to send somebody $100 and they receive the $100. They swap it out and they, you know, if there's a Bitcoin ATM, sadly we don't have many of those in Jamaica. Fingers crossed that one day Jamaica matures and get to that point. We're a country that loves to do well financially. But we have to get to that point where it becomes easier to receive your money. There are places in the Caribbean too, Kalila, that doing a Bitcoin transaction, Barbados is
smooth. Let me just jump in here. From what I understand, there are exchanges that you can buy Bitcoin today in Jamaica. Coinbase, Kraken, CoinMama. These are places where you can go today, and you should be.
You can buy them. That's not the restriction. The restriction is when you should receive the money, right? So it's one thing when you send the money to acquire the asset. It's another thing when capital is coming back. So
when you're trying to cash out.
When you're trying to cash out, right? Cashing out is you're always trying to cash out on a gain, right? So where's the so-called capital gain coming from? And it's not necessarily a capital gain from where cryptocurrencies are standing. You had the same assets, the dollar price for it as exchange and everything. So they're treating you as an institutional investor. You're bringing in a certain volume of money. In my lovely country here, if you're walking around with a certain amount of money on you, you could be arrested for it. So if you don't have that sort of capital, like Kalila was teaching recently, where you need a certain income or cash flow that is familiar. It helps you when you want to do loans, source anything. If you don't have that cash flow and then all of a sudden it's coming, questions are going to be asked. And I've seen where certain transactions get flagged and you spend a month and a half trying to receive capital that you wanted because you decided to swap some assets. It doesn't mean that everybody's having that problem. They're at the individual level, those problems may surface if you're structured a certain way as a certain type of person, it's not a bottleneck at all.
Yeah,
that's a different conversation.
Same thing. Aaron was saying some banks here in Jamaica are blocking you for using their card to purchase crypto. I wasn't able to use my Scotia card. It kept declining. I heard that was designed
by the bank. And I would recommend that person stop for now. Please stop using. I don't want to sound negative against a bank because I have nothing against any bank. Just hold off on the Scotia transactions for now. I would recommend them.
Yeah, Scotia is, I'd say, the most conservative bank, or at least one of the most conservative banks in Jamaica. So it's going to be difficult to do something like that kind of transaction with that particular bank. And nothing wrong with that. That's their strategy. Like
you That's said, your strategy. Yeah.
To me, that just sounds like we need more innovation in Jamaica, more tools for on and off ramps to Bitcoin.
And it's not an innovation problem. You know, Jamaica has a fine innovation ecosystem. It's a policy issue.
No, I get it. It's a but policy. Sometimes innovation has to kind of set the tone and encourage policy. So
in about 3 years, you will see a solution pop up that just seems to work.
Hopefully sooner than that. Gaffar, maybe you need to be the one to develop it since you have all your fans online saying go Gaffar. Last question on Bitcoin, and this one is for Charlene. It comes from Ayrton Stones, who says, I've been wanting to do crypto mining for the longest, but no one talks about the process. How easy is it to get into mining and how would you start?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So I'll start specifically with Bitcoin. So Bitcoin mining is a process to create new Bitcoin, and a Bitcoin miner is simply a high power computer, and you hook it up on the internet, and you hook your miner. It's actually the size of a shoebox. You hook your miner to a mining pool, and you're able to, assuming you have low cost electricity, you're able to create Bitcoin. Now, Bitcoin mining, is it easy to get into? It actually is. You know, sometimes if you were to, but I will say buying a top of the line miner can cost you roughly $15,000. However, you could buy a lower model or an older model miner and start mining. I actually mine at home with my son, just because there's, you know, it's actually the most tangible way to be connected to Bitcoin, right? It's a computer, and you know, the Satoshis, which is the smallest unit of Bitcoin, are dropped into your wallet as you mine. I'd be happy to share some resources to get started. I think that mining is a great way to understand Bitcoin. But I will say with the Bitcoin halving that we just had, mining just got a little bit harder. And the block reward that we heard about earlier just was cut in half, right? So that block reward, when you mine a block of Bitcoin now, the block reward, if you win that block, is 3.15 Bitcoin per block. Before it was 6.2 something. So, which means when you mine now, you need a more efficient miner. And we didn't talk about this, but I just want to bring it back. What we're seeing in the Bitcoin mining space is so interesting is that you're seeing your large Bitcoin miners look at areas in countries in Africa or Latin America because they have access to cheap energy. That cheap energy is being provided by hydro. Mostly hydro and some solar. So we had earlier, there was a conversation about the importance of green energy. Where you have Bitcoin miners co-locating mining farms on hydro mini grids and really creating electricity for areas in Africa that didn't have electricity. Now that's another utility of Bitcoin that you don't hear in crypto. There's no other coin that can do that. There's no other coin that can give you that constant stream of income and that scarcity of an asset. And I just want to say, you know, it's really important as an investor for you to be very specific. When you're saying crypto, there are thousands of cryptocurrencies. You need to be very clear about what you're investing in. And for me, I'm bullish on Bitcoin specifically. And as you think, as you evaluate all these digital assets, it's just important for you to understand the characteristics of one versus the other. They are not all the same. They are not all worth your money, and they're not all worth your time.
Well, thank you so much, Charlene. Thank you, Gaffar, for that comprehensive overview. How can people find you online?
Lady first, please.
You can find me on Twitter at Char Federepo or X. You can also check out my website, charlenefederepo.com. If you want to learn more about how Bitcoin is changing Africa, check out my new book. It's coming out in the fall. You can sign up for my waiting list at charlenefederepo.com/books.
Awesome. And I'm going to put you in the description as well so people can find you more easily. Gaffar?
Yeah, very similar. So X.com, formerly Twitter. Telegram is my home base. WhatsApp. I use most of these social platforms, but those are the three main ones. No website or books to tell you about. Most of my stuff are done on Telegram now. I think that particular piece of technology circumvents most of what I need to do to communicate. So again, Twitter, Everything is at Ghaffar Ellis, same name, same work, even LinkedIn. You can find me there. And if you have any questions you want to ask, I'll leave this with everybody. So having been around since 2010, gone through the ups and downs and all of this, I went through that bullish phase, and I'll just say this to people. Whatever seems to work for you, just like any stock, any core value of something that's an asset to you, and that's not just something that is your income, but think of it as something that you could hold on to that has true value, like land or gold. Crypto is very similar in that light, but it has many of the same facets and a few bit more as it is digital. So find the things that work for you. Bitcoin may work for you. Bitcoin may not work for you, as in terms of the mining capabilities. As you just heard, the halving gets more. It's the halving happened. The rewards are less. The capabilities that you need to be able to facilitate has gotten higher in the costing. That is going to keep going up. The competitiveness for mining Bitcoin is going to go through the roof. That's where a lot of big institutional money is going out into the mining companies and the mining farms. But as she rightfully said, you have to be in the right environment with the right electricity, so you will have a lot of money being spent to find those more affordable places to generate all of this stuff. And the truth is, the wider cryptocurrency market has other options and other approaches to doing things. It's not set in stone that you have to do Bitcoin. The beautiful thing about the cryptocurrency space is its vulnerability and also its volatility, but also the options that you have to work with things that you can do, your other mineable assets too. There's other things about the cryptocurrency space that, as we mature, I'm just going to be honest, I used to be that bullish on one asset. I'm more focused on building out and holding on to a portfolio that I'm in control of, and Bitcoin is a part of that for sure. Yet there are other assets and other blockchains that provide different type of capabilities. So keep your mind and your eye open, and these capabilities will come. We have 1.4 billion people on the contiguous continent of Africa. And those markets, including that of the Caribbean and the rest of the world, are going to at some point interact with these ecosystems. So think of it as Bitcoin as the foundation for all of what's going on. It has, what, 52% of the entire cryptocurrency marketplace now. But you want to make sure that you look and find the gems that lie out there. There are others. Again, I'm not promoting any specific token or shilling anything. Just letting you know that options are there for the future, and you don't want to miss a financial ride to that future.
Yeah, very interesting. Thank you once again, Ghaffar. Thank you, Charlene.
Nice to meet you, Charlene.
Let me introduce our OG, Clive Charlton, now for the final segment here on The Analyst. Clive, you have an update for us. Welcome back, by the way.
There he is. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Good.
So first quarter for 2024 is done of the calendar year. What can you tell us that you've been observing so far about the Jamaica Stock Exchange specifically?
Okay, well, there's a very bright, interesting headline in the Sunday Gleaner Business. Stocks add over $70 billion of value in the first quarter. Now, how is value added to the market? Value is added by movement in stock prices upward, yeah, as well as additional listing. And we have seen a significant listing, Ace Bryden, which was already listed on the Jamaican dollar market. It was listed on the US dollar market, added about 200 plus million US dollars to that market. That is part of the value added. In addition to that, we have seen some price movements. Part of it is a normal cycle of the market performance. You know, over the calendar year, you know, there are ups and downs that comes with the period that it is trading, and that is associated with the publication of financial results, as well as various declarations by the directors or the management of the respective company, declarations such as particularly dividend distributions. So we have seen some upward movement in the market over the last quarter. Not unusual, very much not unusual, but I think the most significant part though is the movement of, on the main market, we have seen the movement of last D and last M to the main market. There's no movement in, well, it's the same, it's a market overall, the JC market, just a movement from junior to main. But certainly Ace Bryden was listed on the US dollar market. We have seen considerable price increases. And of course, we know that over the last quarter, particularly Trans-Jamaica and Wigton, which are two of the most diversified in terms of its holding shareholdership securities that were placed by the government on the market a few years ago, they did exceptionally well. they outperform nearly every other security on the market. And because they are so widely held and so many shares outstanding, that price movement times the number of shares over this period of time would have also contributed to that over $70 billion of additional value created on the market. So again, value is created by price movement as well as additional listing. And those two had occurred on the market over the quarter.
Yeah, just laughing because somebody said one thing for sure, Clive is going to be at work. Yeah. So from the roundup that you gave us, were there any surprises?
I don't think there were any surprises. No, there was none at all. The cycle is fairly predictable, which is largely grounded on two things. Most companies have year-end December. Between September and December is 9 months. During that time period, you will get a good idea of where the company is going in its next financial year. In the 9 months period, we'll have a good idea of where the company's financial statements will be for the last quarter, which usually is a good determinant of how much dividends will be paid. And that is almost a cycle that we expect each year. You know, so it's not difficult at all to predict. It's not no fantastic, stupendous analysis on any rocket science type application. No, it's simple and straightforward. So that there are really no surprises, except, of course, which again is not a surprise, the listing of Ace Bryden and the opportunity that provided now in terms of cross-trading the J-dollar versus the U.S., and taking advantage of any potential opportunity that there, you know, was or is in that listing.
Yet we're still seeing depressed prices in the market. So Orville saying, hardly see anything increase, more downwards movement. You have David saying, stock a drop like fly.
Yes, that happens. And let me go into a little bit of figures right here. I have my data in an Excel spreadsheet and I have to kind of turn my head to get, you know, some to see. But yeah, we talk about the cycle. Between December 2023 and January, end of December, we look at the indices, which is a combination of the prices of the individual securities. Between December to January, their prices moved up just marginally. The main index, 0.85%. The select index, which is the most liquid blue chip securities, we call them blue chip, the larger companies, more liquid companies, moved up 0.84%. The select 0.84%. The junior market was down 0.9%, which is about the same. Well, by February, the main index, which was up just 0.85% at the end of January, the main index in February was up 3.2%. Okay, the select index, which was up just 0.84% up to between December and January, by February, end of February, measured against December, that was up 2.6%. We can look at the junior market, which was up from a negative 0.9% to a positive 0.7%. And of course, the combined 3%. The manufacturing and distribution index was up 3.3%, which has over the years have not performed so well, right? And the financial index was up 1.8%. So again, during that period, note, a lot of companies are publishing, not just final year results really come, usually start published about the end of March into April. But a lot of third quarter results ending December, and also by February, March, end of March, we may see a lot of first quarter results coming out, right? As well as during this period, also heavy dividend declarations. So February, we saw the indices right across the spectrum of the 7 or 8 indices moving upward. That is, average prices had moved up. Of course, by March, interest rate, we saw prices kind of declining. So let me quote some numbers here for you. The main index, which was up 0.85% in January, up 3.2% in February, was up 0.62% in March. That is, all these months are compared to December, end of December. So you can see that the value of the average value of the stock started to recede by March. The select index, which was up between December and January, 0.84%, was up 2.6% in February, was just up 0.8% in March. So we can say that prices started to decline by about March. This again is not unusual. When prices move up, there are some speculative buyers who will jump into the market. Their only intention is to be in the market very short term, take advantage of any quick price movement and dividend declaration, and they're out again. So they're exiting will kind of ease the prices back down. So it's a normal cycle. What it provides for us, for those who did not get out of the market quickly or take advantage of this price movement, what it still provides, too, it shows that the investing public are still interested in the market because there's value in these companies. That's one. Two, if you read the news over the last several, I would say even during immediately post-COVID, prior to COVID, post-COVID, but more so over the last year. For example, Wisinko, Rollers, Grace, we see them making significant acquisitions, local, some acquisitions are publicly listed entities, but it's and overseas also. So these companies have good value. And I think the market recognizes that. So what you can do is take advantage of these depressed prices. I expect, we're talking about the first quarter, but we can extend a little bit further. I expect prices to decline, to go down again, the normal cycle. Just look at the indices, go over the last number of years, look at the indices between each quarter and look at how they move in what direction. Prices usually are cheapest during the summer period, June, July, August. However, even though prices are cheapest, that's where sellers are hard to sell. So volume is very low. So you begin to buy right now as prices are edging downward, right? And we expect several companies to continue to declare dividend. There are quite a few companies that declare, a few companies that declare four times a year, four quarters a year, or each quarter of the year. There are some that declare three times a year. There are some that declare twice a year. No company declares once a year, unless it's a brand new listed company that needs capital. Right? But there's still tremendous opportunity. But the last quarter was fairly good. Nothing unexpected, to be honest with you.
Oh, somebody saying, oh, here it is. Sean said, dividends are keeping me from starving right now.
True.
And we have Orville. Orville says, you have to use a microscope to see these gains. Dr. Lithium says, if the company is still solid, just enjoy the lower prices and average down. And then yes. We have a point here from Ryan. Ryan says, the market is down because private and GOJ bonds are at interest rates of 8.5 to 12.5%.
Yes.
Until BOJ starts reducing interest rates, then the JSC market price in some companies will continue to drop. You agree that that's the case?
Yes. We have seen since January a plethora of bonds, short-term instruments hitting the market. We have seen some GOJ instruments oversubscribed, heavily oversubscribed, as well as some persons, the Jamaican dollar has devalued. There's been a little bit of pressure on the Jamaican dollar over the last few months. So persons are finding in alternative investment options in these securities outside of equity. And that is also a part of the concern. It's part of the option that is presented to you. So yes, he's quite correct. You know, for example, JMB extended the tenor of two bonds. The formerly 7.5% coupon, preference stock was extended to 9.5% for an additional 5 years. The demand for that was such that the price has moved up upward of 30% in the last two or so months. That's a preference stock equivalent hybrid between a bond and a stock. More so, its features more like a bond. We are seeing the JMB preference, US dollar preference, that initially was 6%, right? Was recently extended and the coupon was increased to 8.5%. It's trading as high as 40% above its original price. So there's a strong demand for this short-term instrument, especially the US dollar denominated, because that not only gives you a yield, particularly a coupon, but also it is tradable in US dollars, which protects you also against devaluation, potential devaluation. So we have options in the very same equity market for bond-like structured instruments, you see, as well as the traditional common stock equity instruments. And there are opportunities there in the bond space, the debt space, government and commercial, private commercial, as well as in the FX market also. where the Jamaican dollar, which of course tend to depreciate against the US over a period of time, also has been under a little bit of pressure, and BOJ has intervened to kind of subdue that devaluation a few times. However, there has been gain on the US dollar over the last 3 months also. So that is another investment option for the investor.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for that roundup, Clive. We appreciate it as usual.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me again.
We'll take our final break and come back with your comments.
This segment of Taking Stock, the Analysts, was brought to you by JMMB Group, your best interest at heart.
Butterfly in the sky.
What?
I can go twice as high.
So if this is you, download my free e-guide right now, Financial Terms Made Simple. It's a list of 40 commonly used financial terms broken down into simple language. Because don't you just hate when you look up a word and it gives you an even bigger word as a definition? So this is not that. I've made it as easy as possible so you can just whip it out and use it as a quick reference when you hear a term that you don't really understand. That way you don't miss investment opportunities because you were too embarrassed to ask what a bond is or what an IPO is. Let's get this money. Welcome back, welcome back. So let me look, I was just browsing through your comments just now. So a lot of activity during that Bitcoin segment. We don't talk about it much on this show, but clearly you guys are very interested. So maybe we need to have some more Bitcoin discussions both here and in Money Mission. I see there was a lot of conversation about which platforms work from Jamaica. So Desert True said Kraken was easy to set up an account. He uses regular debit card to transfer money, or she, to transfer money to their Kraken account. Dr. Lithium says he uses interactive brokers. Stronglink, however, says SBF made him skittish of crypto. Sam Bankman-Fried, who just got prison time because of, you know, the whole, what was his company called again? Can't remember off the top of my head. I'm sure somebody in the comments is going to tell me. Let me see what else is happening. Sean says the market is depressing. Orville says like a ton of bricks. Dr. Lithium says CDs are looking nice right now. Those interest rates, I'm telling you, they are up. What else do we have? Sean says today was the worst day on the market for me. Roswell says not many can ride out the storm. Let's see who can. Sean says the winds are rough. There was some people talking about Gemini in terms of Bitcoin trading. What's your experience with using the Gemini platform? Cleaning says it's all about the long-term investments. Dr. Lithium, if the company is still solid, just enjoy the lower prices and average down. And then also saying if the company is still solid. Oh, I already read that one. Have a few more comments here as well. Truly a lot of comments. But we're going to have to leave it there for this evening. It was my pleasure having you, and I hope you enjoyed this show. I sure did. I learned quite a bit this evening. I'm going to be looking up our two guests, our two newbies to the show. A special thanks to all of our guests for this evening. Special thanks to Nigel Davey from Innovative Energy Group, Awa Muirhead from Barita, our analyst today, Gaffar Ellis, Clive Charlton, and Charlene Hill Fadaripo for joining us. Make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel, and share with a friend. Also subscribe to the newsletter at KalilaReynolds.com/newsletter. I'll see you again, same time, same place. I think we have an episode of The Property Source coming up this week. So tune in on Thursday evening for episode 6 of The Property Source with Remax. And then on Friday evening, we have our new episode dropping with JN here on the platform. So make sure you're subscribed. Now tell a friend about Taking Stock, because investing is the new sexy. Let's make it cool to talk about money. I'm Kalila Reynolds. Thanks for watching. See you next time.
This man.